Hello and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Tonight's presentation is a detective story by Robert Barr, which parodies Conan Doyle's famous sleuth, Sherlock Holmes. Our hero in the tale is Eugene Valmont, whose name is probably not familiar to you. He's a private detective in New York, although for several years he has served as the head of the Secret Service in Washington. If you've never heard of him, it's because the records of his exploits are buried with other classified documents, which have remained undisclosed for national security reasons. Since he entered private practice, he's taken on many strange cases, not the least of which is the story called The Liberation of Wyoming Ed. But it's best to let Mr. Valmont give his own version of the tale.
A man should present the whole truth to his doctor, his lawyer, and his detective. Those who do not trust a professional should not be disappointed when the results are unsatisfactory. In the case of Wyoming Ed, I was not given all the facts, and this led me to liberate a dangerous criminal, caused me to associate with a robber, and could have gotten me thrown in prison if I had been found out. It was entirely my own fault that I became involved in affairs which are almost indefensible and wholly illegal. It began when I arrived home one morning after breakfasting out, only to find a man waiting for me who gave his name as Douglas Sanderson. I suspect this was not his real name, but I never pursued the matter. By his dress and manner, I surmised that he was the confidential servant of a wealthy family. At any rate, after the normal introductions, he began with an air of condescension by trying to bribe me.
"Sir, I am a very rich man, and can afford to pay well for the service I am asking you to provide. You may name your own terms. The task I am asking you to perform will involve the utmost secrecy, and for that I am willing to pay. It may expose you to great danger, and for that I am willing to pay. It will probably involve a large sum of money, and that sum is at your disposal."
With that introduction, the task must either be illegal or unsavory or both. By mentioning compensation first, you have mixed up the natural order of hiring a detective. The first step is to explain what you want me to do, and then, if I accept the case, it will be time to discuss my fees.
"It is difficult for a father to confide in a complete stranger the indiscretions of a beloved son. Before doing so, you must pledge your word that my communication will be regarded as strictly confidential."
"That goes without saying. Whatever you care to tell me about your son will be mentioned to no one. Please proceed, for my time is valuable."
"My son was always a little wild and difficult to control. Although he had everything he could possibly wish for right here at home, he chose to go west, where he fell into bad company. I assure you there is no real harm in the boy, but he became implicated with others and has suffered severely for his recklessness. For 5 years he has been an inmate of a prison in Colorado. He was known and convicted under the name of Wyoming Ed."
"What was his crime?"
"His alleged crime was robbing a railway train."
"And what was his sentence?"
"Life in prison."
"And what do you want from me?"
"Every appeal has been made to the governor of the state in an attempt to get him pardoned. All those appeals have failed. I have been told that if enough money is offered, it may be possible to arrange my son's escape."
"In other words, you wish me to bribe the officials of the jail?"
"I assure you the lad is innocent."
"Then if you can prove that, why not appeal and get a new trial?"
"Unfortunately, the circumstances of the case, his arrest on the train itself, the number of witnesses against him, give him no hope that a new trial would end in a different verdict, even if a new trial could be obtained, which I am informed is not possible. Every legal means of trying to liberate him has already been tried and failed."
"I see. And now you are determined to use illegal activities to get him out? I won't have anything to do with the mission you propose. My motto, since entering private practice, is truth will prevail. I can send your mind completely at ease regarding your son, if indeed you have a son. Your boy at this moment occupies a humble, if honorable, position in the wealthy house from which you came. You are not a rich man, but a servant. Your son never went out west, and probably never will. It is your employer's son, the heir to great fortunes and estates, who became the Wyoming Ed of the Colorado prison. Even from what you say, there is not the least doubt he was justly convicted, and you may go back to your master and tell him so. You came here to conceal the shameful secret of an affluent and notable family. You may return knowing that secret has been revealed, and that the circumstances in which you so solemnly bound me to secrecy never existed. That, sir, is the penalty for lying."
"Oh, oh, God help me. It's not my own secret that I am trying to guard.
Please don't weep. I will not betray the secret. You are no worse off than you were half an hour ago. I must admit that one of my weaknesses is a soft heart.
I have done my errand badly. I don't know what I said that has allowed you to make such an accurate statement of the real situation, but I've been a blundering fool. God forgive me, when so much depended on my performance.
Don't let that trouble you. Nothing you said gave me the slightest clue.
You called me a liar, and that is a hard word to swallow, but I would not lie for myself, and when I do it for one I revere and respect, my only regret is that I have done it to no avail.
My dear sir, the fault is not with you at all. You were simply attempting the impossible. Stripped and bare, your proposal amounts to this. I am to journey to Colorado and there commit a crime, or a series of crimes, bribing sworn officials to ignore their duties and permit a convict to escape.
You put it very harshly, sir. You must admit that, especially out west, there is a certain lawlessness which is prevalent. The real criminals in the robbery of the railway train escaped. My young master, poor fellow, was caught. His father, one of the wealthiest men in America, has grown prematurely gray under the burden of this terrible dishonor. He is broken-hearted, a dying man. The young master is an only son, and failing his appearance should his father die, all the money and estates will pass to strangers. Our helplessness in this situation adds to the horror. We dare not make any public move. My employer has such influence among the governing bodies of this country that the average American, if his name were mentioned, would think his power limitless. Yet he dare not exert that power to save his own son. However much he or another may suffer, publicity must be avoided, and this is a secret which cannot safely be shared with anyone other than those who know it already.
How many know about it?
Only 4 people are aware of this situation, and one of them is incarcerated.
Have you stayed in touch with the young man?
Oh, yes.
Direct communication?
No, through a third person. My young master has implored his father not to write to him directly.
This go-between, as we may call him, is the third person who knows the secret? Who is he?
That I cannot tell you.
Mr. Sanderson, it would be much better for your employer and his son if you'd be more open with me. These half-truths are misleading. Has the son made any suggestions about how he might be released?
Oh, yes, but not the suggestion I have put before you. His latest letter said something to the effect that within 6 months or so, there is to be an election for governor. He proposes that a large sum of money be used to influence this election so that a man pledged to pardon him may sit in the governor's chair.
I see. And the sum of money is to be paid to the third person you referred to?
Yes.
And I take it that this third person is the one who has been given various sums of money over the last 5 years in order to bribe the governor to pardon the young man? You need not reply, Mr. Sanderson. Your silence is answer enough. The third party is the crux of the situation. I strongly suspect him of blackmail. If you would but name him and allow me to lure him to these rooms, I possess a little private prison of my own, a dark closet. And I venture to say that before he passed a week in it, subsisting only on bread and water, he would tell the truth about this business.
What? Lock a man in a closet here? In this house?
For someone so casual about lawlessness out west, why are you so squeamish about holding a man here? At any rate, you are beginning at the wrong end of this business. It seems to me 5 years of giving money to this third party without any result might have opened your eyes.
Indeed, sir, I must confess that I have long had a suspicion of the third person, but my master has clung to him as his only hope. And if this third person is interfered with, he has deposited in the city a full history of the case, at some time unknown to us, and if it should happen that he disappears for more than a week, this record will be brought to light.
My dear Mr. Sanderson, that device is as old as Noah and his ark. I would chance it. Let me get my hands on this fellow, and I guarantee there will be no publicity about the affair.
No, I'm sorry, sir. Everything might happen, as you say, but it would not advance our cause. The important thing is the liberation of my young master. It is possible that the person unmentioned, who we may call number 3, has been cheating us throughout, but that is a matter of no consequence.
Pardon me, but I think it is. Suppose your young master was here, free of his shackles. This number 3 would continue to hold the same power over him which he has held over your employer for the last 5 years.
I think we can prevent that, sir, if my plan is carried out.
This scheme for bribing politicians and prison officials is yours, then?
Yes, sir, and I may say I am taking a great deal upon myself in coming to you. I am, in fact, disobeying the implied commands of my master, but I have seen him pay very large sums of money to this number 3 for the last 5 years, and nothing has come of it. My master is an unsuspecting man, and thinks everyone is as honest as himself.
Well, that may be, Mr. Sanderson, but permit me to suggest that the one who proposes a scheme of bribery, and, to put it mildly, an invasion of the law, shows some knowledge of the lower echelons of society, and is not in a position to boast about his own honesty.
I cannot argue with that, Mr. Belmont. My master knows nothing about my plan. He's given me a huge sum of money, as demanded by number 3, and he supposes that amount has already been paid to the go-between. As a matter of fact, it has not been paid and will not be until my idea has been tried and failed. In fact, I am about to use this money, all of it if necessary, to see if my idea will work. That is, if you will take the case, I have paid number 3 his usual monthly allowance and will continue to do so. I have told him my employer has his proposal under consideration. There are still 6 months to make a decision.
Just a moment. Number 3 says there's an election in 6 months for governor, and you said it's in Colorado, correct?
Yes, yes, that is correct.
Just a moment. Where's my American yearbook? Ah, yes, here it is. Now, Colorado. Colorado. Yes, here it is. There is no election in that state, Mr. Sanderson, for 18 months. Number 3 is simply a blackmailer, as I suspected.
I quite agree, sir. So here is my plan. I read in the newspaper about a man in prison in a Spanish dungeon. His friends arranged it so the officials would say that he had died, and his body was turned over to his relatives. Now, if that could be done in Colorado, it would serve two purposes. It would be the easiest way to get my young master out of jail, and it would remain a matter of record that he was dead, so there would be no search for him, as would be the case if he simply escaped. If you took on the case, perhaps you could see my young master in his cell and ask him to write to this number 3, telling him he was very ill. Then you could arrange with the prison doctor to stage my young master's death. Word would get to number 3 quickly enough.
Very well, we can try that. But a blackmailer is not so easily thrown off the scent once he has tasted blood. But still, there is always my private dungeon as a backup, and if your plan for silencing him fails, I guarantee that my more drastic and equally illegal method will be a success. My scruples concerning the acceptance of this case and my initial dislike for the old man had both faded away during our conversation. I saw him under the stress of deep emotion and began to realize the tremendous chance he was taking in going against the will of his master. During our long interview, old Sanderson gradually became a hero in my eyes. So, entirely opposite to the resolution I had made at the beginning, I accepted the case. Nevertheless, my Colorado experiences are those of which I am least proud, and all I care to say on the subject is that my expedition proved completely successful. The late convict was my companion on the train back to New York. I considered myself honor-bound not to make any inquiries about the young man's home life or upbringing, and the ex-prisoner volunteered no particulars about himself or his family. Once we boarded the train, however, he did attempt to obtain some information from me about his situation.
You were acting for someone else, I suppose.
Yes.
For someone in New York?
Yes.
He put up the money, did he?
Yes.
Of course, there's no secret about it. I expected help from the outside, but Colonel Jim has taken so long about it, I was afraid he'd forgotten me.
Who is Colonel Jim?
Colonel Jim Baxter. Didn't he give you the money?
I never heard of the man before.
Then who put up the coin?
Douglas Sanderson?
Well, ain't this something? You never heard of Baxter, and I ain't never heard of Sanderson.
This led me to suspect that Douglas Sanderson did not give me his real name. The moment we arrived in New York, I sent a message to the supposed Mr. Sanderson to meet us at my house at his earliest convenience. He was waiting for us when Wyoming Ed and I arrived.
I thought you were going to bring him with you.
Bring him with me? Of course I did. This is Wyoming Ed.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That is not the right man.
You told me you were Wyoming Ed.
Well, I've been playing Ed for the last 5 years, but I'm not the real Wyoming Ed. Say, are you acting on behalf of Colonel Jim Baxter?
No.
Well, then, boys, this is a sort of mix-up, isn't it? I wish Colonel Jim was here to explain. Hey, boss, this is not my fault. You don't intend to send me back to that hellhole, do you?
No, not if you tell me the truth. Sit down over here by the table. Mr. Sanderson, please take a chair. Let's make this as civilized as possible. Would you care for a drink?
Have you got any Kentucky or Canadian?
Yes, here is some Canadian. Now, that you know your rescue was a mistake, what are we supposed to call you?
You can call me Jack for short.
Very well, Jack. Help yourself.
Thank you, sir. I could use a stiff belt.
Now, Jack, you realize that even if I wished to send you back to prison, I could not do so without incriminating myself. You are legally dead, and you now have a chance to begin life anew, an opportunity I hope you will take advantage of. If you showed up 3 weeks from now at the prison doors, they would not let you in. You are dead. Does that ease your mind?
Well, Squire, you can bet your bottom dollar I never thought I'd be pleased to hear I was dead, but I'm glad if it's all fixed like you say. And you can bet your last pair of boots I'm going to keep out of that pokey in the future if I can.
Good. Now, I promise that if you answer all my questions truthfully, you will be given enough money to start a new life.
That's good enough for me.
In prison, you were known as Wyoming Ed?
Yes, sir.
If that was not your name, why did you use it?
Because Colonel Jim told me to. He said it would give him pull in New York to get me out.
Did you know Wyoming Ed?
Yes, sir. He was one of us there that held up the train.
What became of him?
He was shot dead.
By one of the passengers?
You don't expect me to give away a pal, do you?
Since that pal has given you away for the last 5 years, it seems to me you are under no obligation to show him much consideration.
I'm not so sure he did.
I am, but never mind that. Colonel Jim Baxter shot Wyoming Ed and killed him. Why?
Hey, you're going a little too fast. I didn't say that. How about another shot of that whiskey?
Pardon me. I hate to restrict my hospitality, but this is not a drinking bout. It is a very serious conference. The whiskey you have already taken has given you false courage and a distorted view of things. You are going to tell me the truth or not?
Well, sir, I'm perfectly willing to tell you the truth as far as it concerns me, but I don't want to rat on a friend.
As I have said, he isn't your friend. He told you to take the name of Wyoming Ed so that he could blackmail the father. He has done so for the last 5 years, living in luxury here in New York, and has not lifted a finger to help you. In fact, he would be disturbed to learn that you are now free and in this city. By now, he has probably heard the news from Colorado that you are dead and thinks he is in the clear.
If you could prove that to me, then
I can, and I will. Mr. Sanderson, when is your next meeting with this man?
Tonight, at 9 o'clock. His monthly allowance is due, and he is clamoring for the large sum I mentioned to you.
Where do you meet him? In New York?
Yes.
Where?
In Times Square. He always demands that we meet in public places.
That will serve us well. Will you take us to the meeting place? We can stay in the cab where we can see him, but he won't be able to see us.
Yes, I trust you, Mr. Belmont. A cab for me will call for me at 8, and you can accompany me. Still, after all, Mr. Belmont, we have no assurance that he is the same person this young man refers to.
I am certain he is. He does not go under the name Colonel Jim Baxter, I suppose.
No.
Look here, you fellows are square. I concede that. And after all said and done, you're the man that got me out of the clink. Now, I believe you might be right about Colonel Jim, but anyhow, I'll tell you exactly what happened. We called Jim Baxter Colonel, but he never said he was a colonel or anything else. We called him Colonel because his back was straight and he walked as if he was on parade. When Wyoming Ed joined up with us, he and the colonel got to be thick as thieves, and the colonel won a good deal of money from him at cards, but that wasn't unusual. The colonel most always won when he played cards. He was the luckiest gambler I ever knew. We all met in the rush to the new gold fields, which didn't pan out worth a cent. So Colonel Jim told us to keep it down.
Look, the money has run out here, so I'm going to hold up a train. Do you want a piece of it?
I will if there ain't too many in the gang. I've been in that business before, and it is dangerous to have a whole mob of fellas. 3 men can hold up a train better than 3 dozen.
Of course, I know that. Everybody's scared, except the guard. It's going to be easy to take care of him. One shot. Here comes Ed. Hey, Ed, we are going on a little trip tonight. Want to join us?
What's going on?
Tonight at midnight, there's a train scheduled to pass through Buzzard Gulch. It's on an uphill grade, and there's a signal where the train has to stop. We'll take them at the signal. I'll bring some dynamite for the safe. Are you with us, Ed?
Sure. If you say so, Colonel Jim.
It's almost 1 o'clock. The train is late.
Don't worry. It will be here. Yeah, in fact, there's the headlight now.
Looks like it's stopping at the signal light, just like you said.
All right, boys, let's show them we mean business. See, the engineer and the fireman are giving up. Ed, you keep these 2 men covered. Make sure this train doesn't go anywhere. Come on, Jack, let's go get the money car, quick.
Uh-oh, the door's locked.
Don't worry, I'll take care of that. Come on, get inside, quick. All right, I got the guard. Looks like his shooting days are over.
Oh, I've been hit, Jim, just above the knee.
Oh, just a minute. We've got to move. Let me get the keys off the guard. Looks like we're not going to need the dynamite.
Oh.
All right, here's the money. I got it. How bad are you hurt?
I think my leg's broke.
All right, just take it easy. We'll get you out of here. Do you think you can ride your horse?
I don't believe so. I guess I'm done for.
Come on, quick. We got to get out of here. There are Pinkerton agents on board.
Well, go ahead and take care of them, fool. Jack's got his leg broke. Go, shoot them.
I'm not doing it, Jim. I never intended to kill anybody.
Oh, you're willing to take the money, but you don't want to do any dirty work. Either you go shoot them, or I shoot you.
I never killed anyone before, and I just don't think I can, Jim.
Can't do it, eh? Well, here, let me show you how it's done.
My God! You just shot Ed!
Yep, right in the forehead. He won't be telling any tales about us.
What are we going to do? I can't go back to prison. With my record, they'll lock me up and throw away the key.
Jack, I can't help you much. They're going to nab you, Jack. Nothing I can do about that. But Ed here never had a record. So, you and Ed can change identities. That way they'll go easier on you. From now on, you are Wyoming Ed. I'll set it up so it looks like he was shot by the guard. At least they won't be able to charge you with murder. And I'll get the best lawyer I can for you. If they convict you, I will spend every penny of this money to get you out. I'll take all of Ed's papers so he can't be identified. These papers will help me get the cash to you. Ed's folks are rich, so they'll fork over the money to get you out. Now, I gotta get out of here. Good luck, Jack. I mean, Wyoming Ed.
With that, he bade me goodbye and jumped off the train. There. That's the whole story just as it happened. That's why I have a limp, and that's why I thought it was Colonel Jim that sent you to get me out of prison.
There was not the slightest doubt in my mind that the convict had told the complete truth. And that night, at 9 o'clock in Times Square, Jack identified the third party, the go-between, as the former Colonel Jim Baxter, the man who had ruthlessly shot Wyoming Ed. He was now going by the name Major Wren. After a short meeting, Sanderson returned to the cab, and we were soon back at my house to plan our course of action.
I think you will agree with me that no punishment is too severe for that creature calling himself Major Wren.
I'm willing to shoot him dead in the street tomorrow if you give the word.
He not only murdered young Master Edward, but for 5 years has kept his father in an agony of sorrow and apprehension, bleeding him for money all the time. Tomorrow, I will tell my employer that his son has been dead these 5 years, and while it will be a sorrowful occasion, at least the uncertainty will be over. Thank you for offering to kill this foul criminal. He will die, but not as quickly or mercifully as the young master. Here's a photograph. Do you recognize that person?
Oh, yes. That's Wyoming Ed, all right.
Mr. Valmont, there's a strong resemblance between you and the young master. Do you believe you could impersonate him?
That should not be difficult.
Then will you do this? I propose that you two dress in Western attire. I will direct you to Major Wren's favorite haunts. I want you to confront him. He thinks you are both dead, so it shouldn't come as quite a shock. Hopefully it will drive him mad. Perhaps maybe make him suicidal. I suggest that you meet him at night under the cover of darkness to help your disguise. The rest I leave in your hands, Mr. Valmont.
With that, the old man rose and left us. Perhaps I should stop the narrative here, for I have often wondered if I am guilty of manslaughter. That night, Jack and I made plans to meet Major Wren on the street, with Jack under one lamppost and me hiding in the shadows of a building nearby. It was just after midnight, and the streets were practically deserted. Major Wren came down the steps of his club, and Jack stepped out, blocking his way.
Colonel Jim, Ed and we've been waiting for you. Remember that train robbery the three of us did some time back? Well, two of us are dead, and one is a traitor. Ed and I figured we'd look you up so we could talk about who's who.
Wait, what? No, this can't be true! I must stop drinking!
Then, as he was pulling himself together, I stepped out of the shadows directly in front of him, but made no sound so he couldn't tell I was not really Ed. He looked at me with distended eyes, breathing heavily and quickly like a person with apoplexy. I slowly pushed back my hat, and on my brow he saw the red mark of a bullet hole, painted on with dark lipstick, right in the middle of my forehead. He threw up his hands and fell with a crash to the pavement. Heart failure was the verdict of the coroner's jury.
And so ends the twisted tale of The Liberation of Wyoming Ed by Robert Barr. The obscure detective, Mr. Valmont, appears in many other exciting stories, and you may be hearing from him in the future. Our players for this show were Joe Bogue as Valmont, Byron Scott as Douglas Sanderson, Terry Yates as Jack, Darren L. Wedge as Colonel Jim Baxter and Major Wren, and Brad Buchanan as Wyoming Ed. I'm Darren Helwedge, your narrator and the engineer for this show, which was adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation by the Maplewood Barn Radio Players, and that you'll join us again next week at the same time for another classic story right here on KBIA.